Welcome to the Small Business Podcast with Dan and Michael and David Miller.
Hi.
Yeah, David just wants to chime in because he heard that little awkward pause and wonders what's Daniel doing. I'm here to tell you that you're listening to the Small Business Podcast. This week we actually have a double feature. We're going to be talking about the convergence of technology in your data centers, and then we're going to have a little bit on getting attention and then figuring out what exactly can you use to get out of that attention. So, before we get on that, David, you talked to me at New Year's about coming up with a great idea for a podcast called Technology Convergence. You want to give an overview of what we're going to be talking about?
Yeah, I kind of noticed it. I was just surfing the web one day, and I was signing up some free account on some other social networking website or something. I don't know what it was. I forget. And it said, do you want to log in via Facebook? And this website is not Facebook. It has nothing to do with Facebook. But because everybody has a Facebook page and because they have all those apps everyone can create, it said, hey, you know, we can pull in all your profile data off your Facebook account and put it into this one and save you the time of filling it out yourself. So I'm like, sure, that's convenient. So I clicked connect Facebook. I just logged in, put my username and password, and pulled it all right in. And I was like, wow, and, you know, my picture, my favorites, my interests, my bio, all that stuff right then and there. And I was like, that's really convenient. And at the same time, kind of exciting and kind of scary. Because here's why. Obviously, the convenience factor, we understand. We don't have to fill that stuff in again. We've already filled out the
David? Well, as you hear, David has having some technical difficulties. We're going to go ahead and retry to connect to him.
Let me know when you can hear me.
Oh, here he is again. Go ahead, David.
I was on a roll, too, and then my internet. Rah! Okay, so what was the last thing you heard, Daniel?
I heard you telling how you were confused about the convergence of technology.
I was enthused about it? Yes. And
how scary it is.
And scary, yes. It's convenient because you don't have to fill out your information because you've already done it once. Why should you have to do it on every website again? It's exciting to me because we are seeing convergence, and I think it's a good thing that there's too much out there that has redundant information that you have to fill in every time. Like, for example, I used to work in a retail store. And we had this frequent buyer customer card where, like, you come in, you get a little stamp every time you buy something, and after so many stamps, you get, like, a coupon for 25% off your next purchase. I'm sure you've heard of them because everybody's got something like that. I have one for my hair cutter, one for Smoothie King, one for, like, the bookstore. Everybody's got a similar program. And if you sign up on all these things, you're going to end up start carrying around 20 or 30 different cards in your wallet just to keep track of your purchases. And I thought back then, years ago, it's like there needs to be one universal master card that, not the credit card, just a universal card that each individual store, there would be like a little microchip or something. They just program their encoded, encrypted information. And every time you bought something, they'd scan that and say, okay, you know, you got credit for another purchase, but you only need to carry around one card. And to my knowledge, I don't think anyone's doing this yet. So there's another business idea out there for somebody. But I'm excited about the websites starting to, because they're pretty much doing the same thing. If you have one master account somewhere, whether it's with Google or Facebook or Yahoo or wherever, where you filled in all your common information, your name, your email, your phone number, whatever, you shouldn't have to retype that on every new website you sign up on. They should be able to say, hey, connect to it, pull it in, no problem. At the same time, this also poses security risk and the question of who out there does have my information. Do you want to talk about that for a minute, Daniel?
That one is a very intriguing point. Because if you think about what you're doing with your password is that they're accessing your account. They have some sort of script that goes in and pulls everything out. So you have access now to all that data, so they can pull it all out.
David? Right, yes.
And so that's where it gets really scary, because now they have your password. And I don't know what you do with your password, but I have a couple of when I say couple, I mean a couple dozen. And
nice save.
No, it really is. I have a nice little program that randomizes them, and I can prove them all around. But what I'm trying to say is that if you use one password for Facebook and use that same password for another thing, people could get into that. And if you are signing up for social networking and you were combining all your stuff into one location, it makes people easy to find out more about information about you. And this is where I point out all the time of if you think the government knows everything about you, what does your Facebook thing tell everybody about you?
Yeah, you know, few people have really as much privacy as they think they do, but they're giving it away themselves. You know, my goodness, like there was an article shortly before the holidays saying, be smart about what you post on your Twitter account and on your Facebook wall. You don't need to let the entire world know that you're going to be out of state visiting family for the next 2 weeks. Because if someone were to, you know, they did know where you lived and they were going to steal from you, they could check your Facebook page and say, oh, look, they just told me and everybody else they're going to be gone for 2 whole weeks. I have plenty of opportunity to break in and take their awesome computer or something.
If I may, David, real quick.
Yeah.
One of the best examples of that is Twitter. I know that our buddy Clark Howard is a great example of that. He went on a field trip over to, I think, another country, and one of the things he came up with was he posted on Twitter, I'm in the plane leaving the country.
Mm-hmm.
When he got back, all of his people said, you can't do that. That's how people know where you're going. That's how people know when to break into your house. You're in another country.
Yeah,
and so he
exactly.
came back and said, I didn't even think about that.
We don't until somebody points it out. So, yeah, it's a lot of people put information out. Now, most of the stuff out there is, you know, people texting from, you know, oh, I went and took a dump and now I'm picking my nose. And, you know, just sometimes people put really useless information out there.
I'm dumping you from my Twitter account. That's what you're
yeah, I've
about.
Seen that. My status is I'm updating my status. Who here, show of hands, have said that yourself or seen someone do it personally?
I haven't seen anybody do that, so I guess I'm fortunate.
I just have more, either more friends or just more boring friends. I don't know. I've seen it up, you know, my status is I've updated my status. Really? Congratulations. You are clearly bored. So, yeah. But you know what? Honestly, I think I did that at one point. Couple of years ago, just because everybody's got to do it sooner or later. I don't know. But anyways, we're getting off topic here.
Okay, so let's go ahead and give an overview. Let's go ahead and say you log into Facebook, mm-hmm. and it comes up and says, well, why don't you tell us, give us your email address or give us your email login, and we'll pull all the contacts for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you log in, and you give them all your contacts. Well, now they have a database of people you know that they can sell to other people, because if you are, let's say you're at Facebook or if you're at American Express or if you're logging into something and they know that, well, people who use this service or who do these certain things, they only have friends who are rich or powerful. And so you run it out a little bit further until you keep on going and going and going on. And so you've now compromised your friends' email addresses and they're all going to get little invites to join Facebook. Right, David?
Yeah, well, I know, like, with Facebook and many other websites out there, the established, professional, legit ones, they don't store your email address or your password. Some people worry about that. They just need it to log in. Like, for example, I have a Gmail account, which is Google's web-based email system.
Right.
So it says, you know, give us, you know, your Gmail email address and then the Gmail password to access all the contacts in my Gmail account, anyone who's emailed me or I've sent a letter to. And then it brings up a list and I check off, you know, who I want to send the invite to get them to become my friend on Facebook. It's really convenient for you. They at least promise they don't save your personal information. My guess is not even no human being ever sees it. It's an automated thing on their server. I don't know if they, like, obviously they've got to take your friend's email address to send them an invite, but I don't know that Facebook in particular, certainly websites can save that email and then spam it or use it for marketing, sell your information for people who buy those lists to send you spam. Like, you know who I think does. This is just my opinion, my suspicion. Hotmail or any Microsoft-based email system. Have you experienced this, Daniel?
I have not.
Where, here, you know what? Listeners, do a test. Go to Hotmail, create a new email account. It's free. And never do anything with it. Don't tell anyone what it is. Don't log in. Don't do anything. Just forget about it for like a month. Log back in, and I guarantee you, you'll have spam in there.
I don't think that's fair, David, because anything they know how the passcodes or the emails are generated with Hotmail. All you need to do then is just figure out what the algorithm is. I mean, my Hotmail account wasn't too hard to figure out. I mean, if you know it's Daniel and Miller, you have only a couple combinations you can work off that. So then you just have a random email generator, generate enough emails, and you would be able to figure that out.
You mean people are just blindly sending out to any email address they can make up?
Any of the emails you come in from spam, especially if you can do it inside of the Hotmail, if you look closely enough, you will see that they're just – they'll go DanielMiller@Hotmail.com. They'll do DanielMiller1@Hotmail.com. And it just goes down the road. And so they just keep on trying to throw that out there to spam you.
Hmm. It's possible. That's a lot of server power to be crunching that many possible combinations of email addresses.
Not really. When you think about the fact that you can probably download a lot of stuff or email a lot of things and you password crack most things within like 40 minutes, that's not too much, especially if you know that you can find one good email address. And if you can sell that person a certain product, we'll talk about mail enhancement in another episode. And if you can sell that mail enhancement to someone, guess what? That's $40 you made in 40 minutes. And that's all done automatically through a computer. So I can see where they start doing that.
Maybe. You might be right. I'm not totally convinced either way yet. I don't know that they are just selling off your, you know, you create an account and they give it to...
I don't think Hotmail's doing it.
Because
I think it's just random that it happens that way.
See, it's not just Hotmail, though. Like, the university I'm going to is using their Windows Live system for the student email accounts. Now, my student email address is such-and-such@blah-blah-blah.school.edu. So it's not an @hotmail.com address, but it runs through the Windows Live, which is, you know, the backbone for a lot of Microsoft online products, kind of like Google's doing with their – yeah, everybody's doing this stuff. But it's the same system Hotmail is working out of. And the only people who have my school email address were like teachers and fellow students. And sure enough, within a few weeks, I started getting a couple spam messages from these weird – same spam you get anywhere else.
Again, I just think they just go and figure out what the system works, how it works, and how things are assigned, and you just go and work within those parameters. If you figure out how a system's set up, take Flickr, for example. You know how their pictures are set up. You can just go ahead and write a computer program that runs through them all.
Well, you know, we could do a test. We could, at the same time, set up multiple different free email accounts, one at Hotmail, one at something else, one at Gmail, one at Yahoo, etc., and then... say 30 days later, check back and see if they all have spam and how much relative to each other.
I don't know if we can do that for the very simple reason, but they all have varying levels of spam control. So we may get emails, we may be getting spam, but we don't know for certain because they may be deleted.
That's also possible.
We need to have basically honeypot email accounts that basically get spammed by everything and not have any blocks or anything like that. But The main point that we're going for here is showing off how dangerous it is to give away your password. And we saw this with a number of MySpace spams where basically someone put a fake MySpace thing. It pretended to log you out. You would log into a fake MySpace page. And then you would then be giving your password to someone who would then pass along that same post and say, hey, here's someone's post for something. Go ahead and log in here. And that was one virus that could be spread easily through there. And you saw a virus go through Facebook just the other day. Hmm. But going back to what we were saying before, the dangers of sharing your password on some of these sites is very high. I just saw the other day where an individual was able to hack into a site that did exactly this. It wasn't Facebook or MySpace for everybody. But they were able to log in, and through something called cross-site scripting, this is for the very high brainiacs, they were able to grab the entire database and run with it. And they were able to pull out everybody's email addresses, their login password, and then in a text file, so anything that you and I could read, it wasn't even encrypted, they had it stored. So then people could also pull out what people's passwords were for other sites. This was all on one site. They kept it all in a text database, so in case they needed to go get more information on your contacts.
So getting back to our...
Freak out.
So connecting this all the way back to our initial topic about convergence of technology and information.
Yes.
I think on one hand it's inevitable. It's to make business more and more efficient, you have to start connecting these databases from one business to another, one website to another. But at the same time, that does create huge security risk. Where's the happy middle? I mean, is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? Is it just a neutral thing? It is what it is, and it's just where we're going. We just got to be aware of it. What are your thoughts?
I intentionally segregate certain bits of information. Remember, I was commenting to you a while back about Google AdWords.
Right.
And how I'm always suspicious about them. I was reading an article about the reason why Google provides Google Analytics. Is they can figure out how many people are coming to your site, and they can figure out how much is going to your competition site, and then charge a certain amount of money between the two of you to drive a cost on it. So they're basically creating competition by having the Google Analytics inside your site against yourself, which I'm a little weary about that. So I'm trying to find different alternatives to Google AdWords. Google Analytics, because I don't want them both to be in the same pot, if you understand.
Well, you could keep the analytics and use a different company to serve your ads.
That's what my plan is. And that's why I use Google AdWords in one section. I got away from Google AdWords again, but I used Yahoo advertisements for advertisements, and I use Google Analytics for doing analytics. I'm staying away from going back to Google AdWords for the time being.
Now, is this just your suspicion as well, or like, do you know
I've read a couple of articles where people have said this same suspicion exists, and they're weirded out by it too, about trying to figure out why Google would provide this service for free.
Yeah, well, Google provides all kinds of stuff for free, and I'm wondering how and why they do it. I mean, are they just making so much money elsewhere?
I mean, look at Blogspot, or mm-hmm. Blogger is what they call it. They have information on people all over the place. They know what you're typing in. They can figure out keywords. If they can keep a database of what people are talking about, they can go and immediately start doing research. So let's say all of a sudden people start talking about the programming language Lisp. If they start talking about it on the Blogger sphere, then I'm sure Google has an algorithm that says, hey, these people are all talking about this program. What do we know about this? And they can get in on it.
So, okay, I can see how... I can see how having your finger on the pulse of the internet and knowing what's trending and what's important to people can give you a competitive edge in business, because you're like, all right, this is what people are talking about. This is what they need to know, what they're interested in, what they're curious about.
Right.
Let's create products and services to meet those needs. And if you have that information faster than your competitors, you're always ahead of the game. You're always winning.
Right.
And suddenly business becomes not who has the best product, but who has the most timely product.
And that's what Google's trying to do, is they're trying to get more of a lead in before anybody else. Say, hey, look, people are talking about this. We should be doing something about it too before anybody else can get on it. So that's the problem. So going back to that data convergence, on one side it's good. because you have the ability to bring together a whole bunch of tools. Look at the power of Google Analytics and Google AdWords. You can immediately see, oh, this is how much I paid for this advertisement. This is how much I received in return on this advertisement. Great stuff for a business person.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you're giving up certain things. So what I recommendation is just for people to understand when you give away information, what the other person may be doing with it. And by the way, if you hear anybody mentioning the words cloud computing, please run. And let me go on that. Kevin, I mean, David, do you know what cloud computing is? I'm sorry, my mouth is really messed up today.
I wouldn't call myself an expert on it, but I have a general idea. I mean, correct me if I'm off here. Basically, the network is the computer, and more or less you have a terminal on your end. You just have a computer you're accessing from. But all the data, all the information, all the programs, the software, everything is out there distributed across multiple servers and computers all over the place. So there's always, in a sense, one central place that has all your information and all your content, and you can access it from any computer anywhere. You don't have to worry about keeping it on your laptop and, you know, bringing your laptop with you wherever you go. You can just log in from the library. You can log in from someone else's computer. You can go to Japan and log in on a terminal there and have access to the exact same information and software, etc., because it's at a central server, not physically in your possession.
Right. And that's where it becomes a problem. That last comment that you said is a spot-on comment that I was wanting to make a point for everybody. The stuff is not on your server. The stuff is on someone else's server. And so when you look at some of the problems that have come up with cloud computing, take, for example, a very large book publisher or book seller. It's a rainforest in the middle of the equator. It's also the longest river, everybody. I hope that gives enough information. David?
Yeah.
Is that enough information? Somewhat. Okay, it's vague enough. So this vague company, they had downtime, and people were running their computers. They were running software. They were running large programs in the background off of their software. All of a sudden, off their servers. All of a sudden, that large vague company, their servers went down. And as a result, these individuals could not access their websites.
Right.
They tried calling Google. They tried calling that vague company. Dang it. But they couldn't get any responses.
Uh-huh.
So that's one of the problems that you have. You don't have control over the information. You don't have easy access to it. And so it creates a number of problems. I'm not a big fan of this cloud computing because it keeps information away from your server. Now, I know it costs money to run the stuff on your computer. I know it's a trouble. But from a legal standpoint, it's a much better place to be at. We can talk about that on another episode. But David, let's wrap that one up and go on to our second episode portion.
Okay. Sounds good.
You want to frame it?
This is actually based on some timely news, so you can tell when this podcast was recorded. For people listening, are you going to upload this right away, or does it have that couple-week time delay?
I'm going to have a couple-week time delay.
Okay. So remember back a few weeks ago, you might have seen on the news, there's a
billboard?
A billboard in Times Square, New York, featuring President Obama wearing a weatherproof, it's the name of a brand, it's like a coat, a jacket. I don't know. There's some kind of garment company. I'm not familiar with them. Anyways, apparently, as the story goes, he was visiting China and wearing one of their coats of his own free will, from my understanding, because, you know, he wanted to wear it. And a photographer took a picture of him wearing it. And then later, the owner of the weatherproof company saw the picture, said, "Hey, that looks like one of our jackets," contacted the magazine or newspaper, whoever originally published the picture, got
AP photo.
The who?
AP photo, AP, Associated Press.
There you go, the Associated Press, and got the original photo, zoomed in on it, and checked, saw the logo. It was their jacket. So then they got permission from the AP to use that image. So Associated Press, the original photographer, everything was cool. Everything was legit on that end. They took that image and used it for a big billboard ad showing President Obama wearing their jacket saying "a leader in style." And this is showing in Times Square. Now the issue is they didn't ask permission to use President Obama's picture in their advertisement. And this is where the interesting legal stuff comes up, and it'll be interesting to see over the next few days for us, or looking back a few weeks ago for you, listeners, how it goes. Because traditionally the White House doesn't like the president being used in any kind of commercial advertising. They just, you know, they keep politics and commerce separate. Clearly, by the way, Congress is being run.
No joke. That's a good one, David.
Yes. All right. So.
Score one for David.
Where was I? Okay. So now the interesting thing is, you know, legally the photographer had a right to take a picture of him originally. And I think the law goes like if anyone's out in public, you can take their photo.
Right.
Is that right? Yeah, it's just if they're indoors in a private setting or whatever, you have to get their permission. But this wasn't just a photo of a person that someone took a picture of. This is a photo of the president who was then unknowingly used for a commercial advertising purpose. And that's where the legality starts to come in, and it gets really interesting. So I thought it might be interesting to talk about that on our show today too. Do you have any thoughts on this, Daniel?
Well, let's start from the perspective of the small business or the business themselves.
Okay.
They had an idea. They saw that they could have a product advertised, and they went for it.
Mm-hmm.
The problem that we run into is that you are not allowed to use anybody or their likeness in a thing unless you get it signed off on. If you haven't a chance to look at it, you should check out Charlie Booker's Screen Wipe and watch that video and see how much stuff you have to go through just to get something videotaped. Now, with that said, there are some ambiguities to the whole thing. If you look at stuff that come out on the rag magazines, the tabloids, you'll see that they do that from time to time where they publish stuff about presidents and other things. But if you look, they don't really do it too much for the sitting president. They do it once they're out. So
It's also they fall under journalism. So I know a lot of these tabloids are more entertainment than anything else, but it's not using someone's face to sell another. Basically, what this ad does is it makes it look like Obama is personally endorsing this particular product, and he's not. And furthermore, from the business standpoint, if they had hired some other model to stand in and wear their jacket, they would have had to pay that model upfront money plus royalties for using the ad. Obama isn't getting any of that, as far as I know.
And that was the other problem, is that you can't do that kind of stuff. And so when you take a picture and when you're using someone for advertisement, you need to do all the research. Now, from a perspective of how in the world you get out of this, the company themselves, when they contacted to remove the billboard, the White House actually asked the company to remove it. And they said, no, we're not going to. I would say that after you had this happen and you had a mistake show up, you would say, yes, and we will get it out of there. Because now you got your advertisement, you got tons. And I mean, this is going from Times Square. We're talking about it on the Small Business Podcast.
It's been all over the news.
Tons
yeah, it's,
of
they
podcast
are getting
news.
Major exposure from this stunt.
You should go and say, you know what? We will take it down for not only the good of the nation, but because we think it's the right thing to do. And so you do that, guess what? You get bonus points on that one too. So you win all around. And I'm very surprised that this company said, oh, we're not taking it down. So now you have to go through the whole cease and desist order. You have to hire lawyers, which we are not always a fan of, to go and actually go through the legal litigation of suing the person, saying you did wrong, all that fun jazz that we'd love to go and talk to our lawyers about. Right, David?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love my lawyer.
Hey, but a good lawyer can save you a lot of money if you're working with them correctly. But
a good lawyer and a good accountant.
Yes.
But you need to find them. And so that's why every small business we recommend that you have one. Also, if you need to have some sort of publicist services, you can always contact David and I by writing us at smallbusinesspodcast@gmail.com. If you need to know what your company should do, please contact us. We'll help you. We'll give you some guidance on what you should do and how to finagle situations like this. Because obviously, whoever the publicist is for this company, they have never heard the words, stop and do something else. We've won over. But if you want, we can provide that to you. So please, again, smallbusinesspodcast@gmail.com. We will provide you with solutions. Okay, so David, let's bring it on home.
All right.
You've been listening to the Small Business Podcast with David Michaels and Daniel Miller. Today we talked about President Obama and his little issue with the sign. The weather, what was it? The weather?
Weatherproof.
Weatherproof sign in Times Square. And we also talked about some of the issues you need to take into consideration when it comes to managing data at your company. We may talk about this some more and more of an overview if we come back to this topic. But until next week, you've been listening to the Small Business Podcast. You can go ahead and check us out on the web at smallpod.blogspot.com. You can email us at smallbusinesspodcast@gmail.com. Or if you really are hot and wanting to find some stuff out, you can go to facebook.com. Become our fan on Small Business Podcast. I'm sorry, that's your spot, David. You can become our fan by going to
the Small Business Podcast, and we won't steal your information and resell it.
No. We just really want you to be a fan so you can know when the latest episode
is. So we could,
up.
You know, connect and interact and say hello. Yeah, that's cool.
So, David, what are you selling this week?
Well, I'm very excited. It's the same website I've been working on, but I got a new domain for it yesterday.
Really?
Superpowersunlimited.com.
Wow, and now we're moving on to the next phase of the program. If you'd like to go ahead and get some white wall tire paint, you can go to RangerPaint.com. So, until next week, I'm Daniel.
And I'm David.
Have a good week.
And thanks for listening.